Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. In our interviews right now, we're going through what are called the nine elements of Usui Shiki Ryoho. This doesn't mean that these elements don't apply to other forms of practice of Reiki, but they are a part of how I organize myself and give to my students a kind of system that touches all these different elements. One of the elements that is in the system is treatment, and this is self-treatment, treatment of others, and in the second degree, that treatment may be done at a distance, and then there are the ways that we treat ourselves and each other through the precepts. So lots of people imagine that treatment is kind of the kingpin or the basic part of our practice. And that it is from a kind of physical point of view. But treatment also extends into the other parts of our body or being that is not physical, and this is part of a process that we experience sometimes spontaneously as we treat ourselves or one another, but also it sometimes comes up because that's what we're focused on. So our guest today, Elizabeth Valsala, has had a very wide range of different experiences with treatment. She's been in Reiki for many, many years, and is very articulate in how she describes it. So perhaps you will be able to be inspired and perhaps also reassured that some of the experiences that you've had in treatment and that you might question are very common, actually, in our Reiki practice. Welcome, Elizabeth, to our show.
Thank you, Phyllis. It's a delight to be with you here.
Thank you. And, of course, as you know, I like starting out by hearing Reiki stories. It gives me sometimes an additional insight into people and their practice because they share with me things that I've never heard before or maybe I've heard and forgotten. So could you share with the listeners how you met Reiki and where did the motivation come from for you to, present yourself in a Reiki class?
Okay. I think I'm going to back up to the years that led up to that, because when I think of what brought me to Reiki, it was a stream of events that began in January 77.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in that moment, I was in the EFT training, and I experienced a communion with the divine.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I realized that I wanted a divorce. I wanted to have my spiritual life be my spiritual life and not dictated by my husband.
Wow.
And so I didn't actually divorce until 1980, but I did immediately start practicing spiritual practices that he didn't approve of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took a Progoff Journal workshop, and I went on some retreats, and I worked with my church on retreats for women. And I returned to the university as an adult to complete a bachelor's degree in psychology. And I also, during that time, was, raising a young child and going through divorce. And I was working with a medicine man, and I was doing a lot of workshops. At that time, S didn't have any workshops in our area, so I began to shop whatever else was available.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was on a mailing list for workshop junkies. And so I received a flyer in the mail inviting me to take a Reiki class. Now, as I was completing my bachelor's degree in the spring of 1984, I needed to choose what I'd do next. So I was asking myself what my life was for. And the answer I arrived at was that I was called to help ordinary people deal with the stress and trauma of a normal life.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. And now, no form for that to be done through showed up right away in 1984.
Right.
It was actually 3.5 years later that the flyer arrived in my mail and invited me to take a Reiki class. And I didn't know anything about Reiki, but two friends wanted to take the class with me, so we carpooled to Santa Fe and took that first-degree Reiki class. And the initiations were really delightful spiritual experiences, and treating by laying on of hands felt natural for me. And as I was treating the student I was paired up with, I had a vision of a beach, and it turned out to be her favorite beach in Hawaii. And that intrigued me. And it contributed greatly to my satisfaction with the class. And the Reiki master who taught that class later came to Albuquerque to teach us second degree. And I provided treatments now and then for people, but people would say, you can't make a living doing Reiki, you have to have a real job. And during that time, I was working as a temporary receptionist and a PBX switchboard operator. And I was then hired as division secretary for Waddell & Reed Financial Services. That resulted in me studying and getting licensed as a financial services representative. And I was not very successful at generating sales and commissions to live on. So then one day late in August of 1990, I awoke hearing a still small voice saying, you need to do Reiki full time. Well, 14 months later, I was a full-time Reiki master, and I was earning more than I'd ever earned before in my life.
Wow, that's great.
And Reiki allows me to help ordinary people deal with stress and trauma.
Uh-huh, great. Wonderful. Well, isn't it wonderful that you kind of found a vocation that really fit the bill for you?
Yes, and it's funny because when it first came up, you know, in that voice, I thought, well, anybody can do Reiki. But I answered that part of me saying, well, not everyone will.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because it sounds so much like my own path where in 1978, I was wondering what I was going to do with my life and figured that I wanted to help people become individuals and be happy with their individuality. And I knew that was, and now, of course, some 30 years later, I know that it was also what I wanted for myself, but I couldn't really figure that out. That time I had to project it onto everybody else. So, but I couldn't figure out, after going through in my head all the jobs I knew about, anything that would give me that. So I just let it go and figured that something would come up. And luckily, a couple of months later, my mother called me and said, you're traveling with your grandmother, and this is how it is. And I got into Reiki. So it was very interesting that Reiki kind of met our vocational needs. And I use the word vocation for those people whose English is not their first language. Vocation in the English language for me is about something that is more than a job and it's more than work. It's what I'm called to do from spirit. Is that true for you?
Yes, I love it. I'm not as good with words as you are, and that is so beautiful because of the Latin word that comes, you know, as the base of vocation, that is to call.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So... Well, we're combining our mutual knowledge because I didn't know about the Latin, but I knew what the feeling was.
Yes.
Yes. So, when you decided to become a full-time Reiki master, that was in the 1980s?
It began at the end of 1990. The calling came at the end of August. And then I started to get in touch with different Reiki masters looking for different forms of support, like little workshops they might be doing or maybe group practice, things like that.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, that was, for me, a time in Reiki where so much was happening. I mean, the world was exploding, not just with Reiki, but with everything. And people were doing workshops, a different one every weekend, it seemed. Mm-hmm. And Reiki kind of fell into that mode. And, you know, it's really amazing, though, that all those hundreds or maybe even thousands of people who took Reiki, that for some, it just became their life. And I think that that in itself is pretty miraculous.
Yes. And yeah. I recall back in my early years as a Reiki master, I used to pay for a booth at a fair. And I would organize other Reiki masters and practitioners, my students and then other masters, to share in that booth with me.
Uh-huh.
And we would be providing Reiki samples.
Right.
10, 15, or 20 minutes. And the people, my students who participated in those booths, all chose to become Reiki masters.
Really?
Yes.
Fascinating.
As a result of that.
Fascinating. What do you think that was about?
Well, you know, sometimes I love it when students leave a first degree class fully confident. And a lot of the time that doesn't happen. They leave the class wondering, what is this I have, and can I always trust it, and, you know, will it always teach me? And a little doubt is there. Well, just participating in one day for 2 to 4 hours, or maybe 2 days of 2 hours each, or something like that, and maybe they just did a series of 5 or 10 minute treatments, but in those little brief experiences of Reiki, they watched person after person tell them dramatic results they got from that little bit of Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And it became clearer and clearer that they weren't doing it and that Reiki had it all handled.
Great way to put it. Great. Well, it's fascinating, you know, to feel as though that experience of treatment would connect so clearly, or perhaps it's the chicken, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Or were they there with you because they felt a calling and that just clarified it for them? Well, we'll never know, right?
I saw confidence just build in them, though.
Oh, and that is something that only comes with experience, I believe.
Yes, and they got some intense experience of a wide variety of the public, from old people to children, to healthy people, to ill people, to able-bodied,
uh-huh.
to disabled. I mean, a wide spectrum of people, from, you know, people of different religions and of different spiritual views in life. And all they saw the variety of people, and they also saw themselves as the common denominator of these treatments, that they were the one that the Reiki came through.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And they saw that it didn't have to come through a Reiki master.
Right.
That even at first degree level, the results would happen.
Right, right.
So right. Often I hear people dismiss first degree. They think, oh no, you're a master. Your Reiki is better than mine. I say, no. You can have dramatic results.
Right.
Right out of class, right during class, before class is over, many of my students have dramatic results.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and when we were talking the other day, you were talking about some of the, was it the treatment, there were three instances of students that had very different treatment results, and they were very interesting. Do you remember that?
Give you another hint.
Where you were sharing, maybe it was of your first class that you taught.
Oh, okay. No, it was when I was going full time.
Yeah.
And I was, it was...
Oh, you were doing the treatment.
I was doing these treatments.
Oh, right.
I was getting ready to go full time, and I wanted to give myself a sense of what a full schedule of treatments would feel like.
Right. And you had this great strategy, though it didn't work out full time. I'd like for you to share the strategy, because I thought that was really great.
So I invented, since it was December was coming up on the horizon.
And here we are.
That, yes, years later. Would it be 18 years later? I'm 21? I don't know. Yeah. 18 years later.
Okay.
So it was this time 18 years ago, and I invented that anyone who could match my schedule could have a Reiki treatment as a Christmas gift from me.
Uh-huh.
And so I was working then as a temp at, the university here, and so three of the employees had taken me up on that offer, and then I was also attending a weekly breakfast meeting, and someone from there came. And so here was a treatment unfolding before me, and there was one woman who started to go into a rebirthing, and she was moving around a lot, making a lot of noise and doing all that breathing. And I asked her, would you like me to change this to a rebirthing session, or shall I continue with the Reiki? And she said, oh, please continue with the Reiki. So I did, and I was able to keep my hands on her as she moved and complete the treatment. And at the point where she turned over and I began to treat the back, it was as if she had been reborn in that moment, that she was presenting the equivalent of a blank slate, tabula rasa.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It was a fresh new beginning. And I felt that in the treatment. And sometimes when things start to go into a strange direction, I have a moment of, can I really trust the Reiki? And always Reiki shows me that not only could I trust it, but it would exceed my capacity to imagine a great outcome,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and go far beyond what I could imagine. So another treatment that happened, as I was treating the head, my eyes had closed, and I had this experience that the recipient had levitated off the table about 5 or 6 inches. And so I opened my eyes to see what reality was before me, and I saw her reaching down to find the table to see where it was. And I realized we both had that same experience. So I began to get used to whatever could happen during a Reiki treatment, and the next person who came for a treatment, as I was treating the abdomen, I noticed she wasn't in that body. And again, I wondered if Reiki could be trusted, and what would happen if she didn't come back into her body by the end of the treatment. So I decided she wouldn't turn over, and that I would find enough positions on her legs and feet to utilize the rest of the treatment time. And she reported later that when, Elizabeth, when you were over my right knee, I noticed I wasn't in the body, and I was concerned, and I thought, is this okay? And then I realized, oh, Elizabeth is taking good care of my body, and she's putting good energy into it. Everything's just fine. And I went off, and I became a butterfly, and then I became a flower. And so once again, things worked out perfectly, and she, of course, was back in her body at the end of the treatment. And there were many other occasions for Reiki to teach me. I know there were a series of treatments where that which one of my friends calls glommers, sort of dark thought forms that attach to a person that aren't necessarily visible. And yet sometimes during a Reiki treatment, when your eyes are closed, they become visible. And I would see this darkness actually leaving the body as a result of the Reiki flowing through the body.
Hmm.
And so one time, people were scheduling treatments with me, and it seemed unusual that in just 1 week's time, 5 different people were scheduling appointments for something that seemed equivalent to light exorcism, you know, like they seemed to have this darkness that was using them, and they wanted to be free of it.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought about how sometimes when you get a series of people coming to you with the same condition, you should check to see if you have that condition. And so I dialed my friend Darlene, and she answered, and she was at work. And I said, Darlene, you know how hold on, I need a sip. I'm going to cough in a second.
Okay.
Thank you. And I called her. I said, Darlene, you know how sometimes if a series of people schedule with you with the same condition, you should look to see if you have that condition?
Uh-huh.
She said, yes. And I said, well, Darlene, five people have scheduled for Reiki for something comparable to exorcism this week. Is there something I should know, Darlene? And she said, hold on, I'm dealing with something at work right now. I'll call you right back. In a couple of minutes, she phoned and she said, Elizabeth, you need to know that the dark side doesn't recognize you, and by the time it does, it's too late. So I confidently went through that week of treatments, and everything turned out beautifully.
Yes? And did you feel like, were you ever afraid that you would be taking on anything from them?
Never. You know, people often have that fear when they ask me what's Reiki and I tell them. And they often have a concern about couldn't darkness use you? Not that often, but, you know, more than three occasions and maybe two dozen occasions, I've had that question posed to me. And I just know from experience that only goodness and light come through me. And Reiki can be trusted, and it's very pure. And I've also heard from various people, those who checked with spiritual channels about me,
uh-huh.
And also from readers who were volunteering a reading for me, they reference the very pure energy that comes through me.
Uh-huh. And do you feel like that's just from you, or do you feel like that's Reiki?
I feel that refers to Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And yet I hear stories from people who say that it's not true every time they've received Reiki from someone, or not true with every Reiki person they've met. But I think that's because the word Reiki is a generic word now.
Yes.
And not all practices that are labeled as Reiki meet my criteria for Reiki.
Right. So eventually, I think that I'd just like to expound on this just a second for the listeners. When Elizabeth came into Reiki in the late 1980s and early 1990s, this was a time when, historically, when the Reiki practice went from one practice, basically, and just exploded into, I would say, many, many, like maybe, you know, exponentially. First there were 10, and then there were 100, and then there were, I don't know how many, different forms of Reiki. And what I mean by this is not just about hand positions or, you know, whether people taught self-treatment in the class or not, but it was more about the actual fundamental principles that were being used to guide the Reiki practice for students. For instance, in our practice, self-treatment was very important, and that has been taught from the very beginning. But interestingly enough, at this period of time, it wasn't as emphasized as it is today. So students get a very different message today than they did before. Another difference would be that some people felt that there was a certain amount of money that was used to indicate commitment or timing of taking a level of initiation. And for other people, money was not important, and so became something that was actually, for some of the systems, a practice eliminated. So as this has grown through the different years, there's many, many now different forms of Reiki practice, and eventually it comes to a place for myself where there is a boundary where I can, for myself, define it as Reiki or not. And within that Reiki, all those Reiki practices, there is my practice. So it becomes, so this word Reiki has gone from describing one form of practice and one energy of practice to one energy of practice, one energy for many, 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 many practices. And there are boundaries to that. So, for instance, one of my boundaries is that Reiki treatments are hands-on. And there are rare occasions when you would use hands-off treatment, but the basic form of practice is hands-on the body. Another form, another boundary might be that you are initiated in person with the master rather than over the internet or over by the phone. So these are just my own boundaries. And Elizabeth, do you have your own? Can you articulate them?
Well, those were two of them, several. I mean, being initiated in the presence of a living master, having had that master observe you give a treatment, and having four initiations in first degree is something that I use to discern whether someone is closer to my form or further away from it.
Right.
And whether someone was taught in an oral tradition or was given a manual helps me know how close to my form they are. So some of those things are just guideposts.
Right. Yeah. And what's fascinating for me, in this whole arena, and I won't belabor it too much because we will get back to treatment, is that however people come into Reiki, if they're really meant to be a Reiki student, they will enter whatever door they come into, and then they'll find their way to the right practice for them.
Yes.
This is my experience.
Mine too.
Yeah, and so that for me is really wonderful. I'm really happy about that and feel that the environment right now is more open, more supportive of Reiki students really finding their way to whatever practice is right for them in the moment.
And I trust that. I trust that each person finds the right form for them.
Right. Me too. So now I'd like to just shift the topic of conversation to your own treatments, because I just like to go back to when you first became a Reiki student. You received treatments yourself, obviously. And then there was a time when you decided that you wanted to have a longer than 4-day treatment.
Yes.
When did this come about? I've forgotten the story.
Okay. Well, back in February of 2002, you happened to visit, and in one conversation, you happened to mention that some Reiki masters had been experimenting with getting 21 consecutive days of treatment.
Right.
And after you left, I don't know how many days later, it just bubbled up in my mind that, oh, I think I'm going to get 21 days of treatment. And so I got on the phone and scheduled those 21 days. But by the time I got to the 10th day, I thought, no, I want 30. And so I scheduled those out, and when I completed the 30, then I thought, okay, well, now I want 21 days. So after maybe some days of not getting treatment, I was starting to have 21 days of treatment, and when I finished that, then I just felt like having 4 days in a row, 2 weeks in a row, and when I finished that, then I felt like doing 45 days in a row. And by the time I got done with the sequence of Reiki treatments, and this was in addition to my self-treatments, and when I finished it, I had done 120 Reiki treatments in the year of 2002.
Wow.
And some of them, there were two in particular that were quite intense, and where I just, as the recipient, had to really trust the Reiki, because it was going through a moment of terror and needing to just allow and stay with the experience until I was on the other side of it. And knowing that I trusted my Reiki practitioners and I could trust the Reiki, and that if I should make a lot of noise, it'd be okay.
Wow. So, gosh, there's so many questions that I'm sure people would like to hear the your response to.
Well, you know, earlier you mentioned one, what changes did Reiki make in my life?
Oh, right.
And I just want to talk about a couple of changes that Reiki made in my life.
Uh-huh.
And one is there were some areas that I didn't have experience with and was cautious about. And one of those was hospital visits. And I remember at the time when a friend was hospitalized, and this was in the 80s before I came to Reiki, and I remember thinking, oh, I'm so unfamiliar with hospitals, and I really don't feel at ease going into hospitals. And then when in 91, as a master, another master in the community had a project of assisting people living with AIDS, and there was a man who was hospitalized, and we were all taking turns treating him in the hospital. And I noticed how easy it was, how the staff was welcoming, and they would try to, you know, take the person's vitals and then get out of the way and grant us the room and privacy for an hour. And, you know, it was just something that was pretty interesting to do. And throughout my years of practice, I found that one of the experiences I love participating in is if someone is having surgery, I love to provide them with 4 days of treatment. And sometimes I provide the first treatment the night before surgery. And then the next three are, you know, when they come out of the recovery room, and 24 hours after that, and 24 hours after that. And I always see results, and sometimes the staff is quite impressed because in the case of having the self-administered pain relief, the morphine quicker button, they see that while I was present, the person didn't click on that at all. They had no need, whereas they may have clicked it 23 times prior to that. And so I really enjoy treating people in, and sometimes I'm allowed into recovery because they don't have a bed in the hospital for the person. And I just love the pain relief, the stress relief. And hospitals are stressful places to be, and to have Reiki take away all that stress is beautiful. And another area was that I had never been present when someone died. And I still haven't, but at least I get invited in to give a Reiki treatment prior to that death, to the transition. And in a couple of cases, people were just lingering on and just didn't seem to be able to leave. And after the Reiki treatment, they had a very easy passing with lots of peace and clarity and love. And another another person was a Reiki master's friend. This person had graduated from the class of 1939 at Dartmouth, and so had John Gray, and so had my father. And so when I got to give those treatments to Howard, they called. John Gray had recommended that they arrange for Reiki, and so they called me. And they called me 6 months before his passing, and they said they could afford one treatment every other week, and that's what I provided.
Wow, that's great.
And so that's been a joy to for me also. But now that I look back over the years, too, I have a friend who is, you know, I've only known less than a year, but she does worrying, and she has fears, and I really want for her to have the blessing of taking a Reiki class, because I can so see that in my own life, I have so much less worry or fear in my life because of the daily self-treatment.
Well, this is a great bridging back to your year of many treatments, I'll call it, kind of like the season of many moons or falling leaves or whatever they say, your year of many treatments. And one of the things that I remember when you did these treatments is that you were going through a very difficult passage yourself on many levels. Is that, was that true for you?
Well, right now I'm recalling that during that year Reiki guided me to the gym and to sign up with a trainer for sessions and also to Weight Watchers. And something that happened while I was going to Weight Watchers, and I was attempting to match the point system. And in order to achieve the limited points that I was allowed, I switched my diet to mostly soy protein. And what I didn't realize was that my thyroid could not function well in the presence of soy protein. And that there were distinct ways of manufacturing soy products, and some of them were safer than others. And what happened as a result was that in the winter of end of 2002, but early 2003, I ended up without a fully functioning thyroid. And I Googled on the internet and found out that, I went to an acupuncturist for a treatment. At the end of the treatment, she said, "Did you know it was the soy that damaged your thyroid?" And I said, "No, no one told me." But then I Googled on the internet, and it said that in 3 to 5 months of not eating soy, the thyroid would return to full function. And so I stopped eating soy in early March, and in early June, one Wednesday morning, I woke up with full thyroid.
Wow. And was that the period of time that you were also receiving Reiki?
No, that was a year later. That was a year later.
A year later.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting healing process, because for me, there is something about, when you say, for instance, so I'm just trying to dig a little. When you say, for instance, that you heard this voice say, "Well, why not 30 treatments?" And then you wanted to do, I like the different numbers that you came up with. I mean, I felt like they came from a really, genuine place, I would say, and not something that was a head trip, like, "Oh, I should do this," but just something that arose in you. So I'm wondering if, when you were getting these treatments, if there was an understanding within yourself of what was motivating you to receive all these treatments and in these increments. Did you have any consciousness about that?
No, I felt like I wanted to treat myself to a lot of Reiki. And that's what I felt that I was doing.
Yeah. And did you have different results as a result of a 30-day treatment rather than the 4-day treatments and so on?
You know, I just was going as far as I could in the moment and having integration time. So I wasn't going to go through much suffering.
What does that mean?
Well, I wasn't going to put pressure on myself to integrate any more rapidly than I was.
So there was something going on underneath. It wasn't something that was just a surface thing. There were processes that were begun in your life that Reiki came to support or maybe even to stimulate.
That's what was going on, and I was just playing it by ear, so to speak. I didn't have any attachment. For instance, I wasn't attached to completing 45 treatments.
But they just happened.
I was willing to, and thinking back, it may have just been that I maxed out my credit card and had to quit.
So that brings us to the point, did you pay for all the treatments?
Well, yes, eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's amazing, because a lot of people would resist this part of paying for treatments, and I'm always interested in that. And, in my own case right now, I'm going through, you know, this whole process of chemotherapy and radiation for months and months and months, and I've been trying to get the people who are giving me Reiki to receive exchange, and one out of four people are willing to do that. And so it's kind of the other way around. It's like I really want to give the exchange, but they see for themselves that their learning process in treating me is what they want as an exchange. So it's a very, it's very convoluted. So it goes both ways, this whole payment for treatment. So what was it, what was it freeing for you to pay for treatment?
Well, you know, I paid for some in kind. I gave, I treated treatments for treatment in many cases. And I may have accepted a couple as gifts. I don't recall specifically, but I know I used my credit card a lot, and then other times I remember writing a check, and sometimes I was paying cash.
Right.
And I don't recall anything else except, you know, paying with Reiki or some form of money.
And now, after all these years of being what I would call out in the public, and you do treatments with other people for money, and it's your livelihood, and also you've paid for Reiki treatments, what is the connection, do you think, or how do you explain to people this whole thing about paying for Reiki treatments?
Well, luckily, I don't have to explain it very often, but I do recall back in the late 80s, early 90s, when people questioned people having to pay for Reiki since it was God doing it and not the practitioner.
Right.
But I think there are two examples that illustrate this exchange, and one that's often brought up in an article or in a conversation is how the spiritual healers in other cultures often were taken care of by the community. And in the American culture, you'll rarely find a community taking care of a healer.
Right.
So, and another illustration is that people are paying for my time and effort, not the actual Reiki energy.
And I feel when it's really interesting because it supports me in dedicating my life to a certain practice. So I become more sensitive, more adept at what I'm doing, and it gives them then a better experience of treatment. Do you think that's true?
Yes, I do think that there's something about people get what they pay for. However, I do see many exceptions to that rule where people get outstanding results from a Reiki treatment that they didn't have to pay for.
Yeah, so I find this always to be the big question mark. What's the right way to do it? And luckily, there is no right way.
Good, good. I think we can just play it by ear.
Right.
And, you know, it happens that when I'm out in public and I see someone who could use some Reiki and I offer it to them, and sometimes they accept, and I just give them a little bit of Reiki. I don't ask for anything in return.
Right, right.
It's just service work or something that's spontaneously gifted.
Right.
And I do feel that, I mean, I've been standing at different places on one thing, but I do honor the students who want to take the Reiki class because they feel called to have a service that they can give people as service work, as selfless
service. Right.
And they would like to take the Reiki class so they could have something to give in that context. And I honor that.
Me too.
And as far as people giving you treatment, well, one of the things that I like to do in my life is to gift someone with Reiki a treatment, a person who is comparable to the trim tab in the rudder of a boat. So if you have a big rudder that's going to turn the boat, and within that rudder you have a little tiny rudder, and you use less energy to turn the small one, that turns the big one, and that turns the boat. And so certain people in the world I consider trim tabs. And I invent in my mind that when I gift that person with a Reiki treatment, it impacts a lot of people that their lives touch. And so from time to time I meet someone whose work I am very impressed with and very grateful for in the world, and I offer them a gift of a Reiki treatment. And that's just a service that I give maybe only once a year or twice a year, I don't know. Every once in a while, I just want to do that, and you're absolutely someone who meets that criteria.
Oh, thank you. Well, I like the image of being a trim tab.
Good, good. Especially at this time.
Especially at this time, yes, yes, yes. Oh, dear. So, overall, just to leap to another aspect of treatment, overall, what do you feel, or can you articulate some of the values that you've come to through your work with treatment? So I'll just give you an example, and maybe you can't relate, and maybe this is just
I need an example of the word values.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, one of the most profound teachings and has changed my value system totally through my Reiki treatments is when I treat someone and I have a very different physical experience of the treatment than the person that I'm treating. Mm-hmm. So maybe my hands feel really hot and they feel them really cold.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't feel them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I come away thinking, wow, that was such a powerful treatment. And they get off the table and say, well, that's okay. I mean, I didn't really feel anything. And I'm just going, what? And this experience of knowing that that's their truth, that that's their true experience, and knowing that I had my own true experience, and that they're very different, creates a dissonance sometimes, but it also creates the space to hold the dissonance so that we, neither one of us, are right or wrong. We're just having our own experience. And if I can take that and apply it to other places and times in my life, it really creates a space of just for today, do not anger, and just for today, do not worry, because, you know, we all have our different experiences. So I'm wondering if you have come in yourself to some of these, what I would call self-evident truths or values.
Well, what comes to mind immediately is allowing.
Allowing. Can you talk about that?
Okay. So when people don't know anything about Reiki and they want to know something from me, or maybe it's a student in first degree wanting to ask me, how do you do Reiki? My answer is allowing. You know, I make myself available, and I am going to place my hands in the first position to start the treatment, but what I'm doing next is I'm allowing. I'm allowing Reiki to flow, allowing Reiki to use me as a conduit. And it's great to allow elsewhere in life. Yes. And so it's great to allow traffic to be traffic.
Well, Elizabeth, that is genius.
Thank you, Phyllis.
I'm not very good in traffic.
Okay. So when I have a lot of compassion for drivers who might make an error. I've made errors in life. And I think I might make another before I'm done. And so sometimes a driver makes an error, and I have the thought, I could do that. And it saves me a lot of stress and upset with the way things are going.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great one, allowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I we're just about out of time, so I just have one little piece,
mm-hmm.
which I seem to remember that you have this wonderful bumper sticker on your car. Is it still there?
It's not. I one day got inspired to take off all bumper stickers, and actually the very next day that one went back on. However, then I took that off. And now other ones have crept back on.
Uh-huh.
The bumper sticker you're referring to is, don't believe everything you think.
I just think this is genius. Don't believe everything you think.
Yeah.
And one of the most beautiful things about treatment for me is that it is not. It takes us out of thinking. It takes us out of our thinking what things are going to be like or how things should be to what things what we experience things to be. So that takes it into a very different realm, because as treatment we can experience pain, we can experience joy, we can experience deep connection, we can experience separateness. We can experience lots of different things, but they're real experiences. They're not something that comes from our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So then we can really believe in those experiences. And this is the thing that really struck me when I saw this bumper sticker one day on your car, that, you know, I fall into this trap all the time, that I believe what I think. And sometimes I even dismiss my own experience, which actually should be the other way around. So it's a very interesting conundrum, but very beautiful, I think. Like kind of like a Zen koan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wonderful. So I'm really interested in your take on this particular bumper sticker.
Well, I loved what you just described, and I'm not sure. I mean, don't believe everything you think. Well, I don't think that I have my own mind only. I feel that we are used by the mind, which some teachers say all thoughts are recycled. And Byron Katie is one of those teachers who says that. Another teacher used to say 95% of what you think, or of the thoughts you have, are recycled.
Well, so what does this mean? What does this mean?
Well, these thoughts don't originate with us in particular. They're just available, and sometimes our receiver picks up on these thoughts, and it feels like we're thinking them. But they're actually using us. So, and if I I'm quite permeable to thinking. So, or feelings. If I'm kind of absorbent, I can put myself in a crowd, and suddenly I have the mood of the crowd going on.
Right.
And the words that come out of me are words that are the opinions of someone surrounding me, group surrounding me. And then I can step away from that, and I come back to myself.
Uh-huh.
And I remember back in the early 80s as a new divorcee, I would go out to dance country western, and that was in a bar.
Uh-huh.
And a man would be coming on to me, and I would find myself being affected by him.
Right.
But then I would excuse myself and go to the ladies' room. And I would come back to myself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I like this thing about recycled thoughts. Now, that's really neat. I mean,
well, there are many that, you know, if you look into that, you know, thework.com, the work of Byron Katie, there are some that are called core beliefs, like I'm not good enough, they won't like me.
Right.
I can't, I have to, things like that, she hurt me.
Uh-huh.
All those are kind of core belief thoughts. They're totally popular. I mean,
right.
Anybody in any culture at any age could have one of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing that is so potent, and I don't know how it works, and this is kind of the miracle part, I guess, about it, is that as we receive treatments, somehow those beliefs are matched against another reality, our own reality, and they change.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Reiki empowers our authentic self, and it restores us to ourself.
Right.
And it gives us power in the face of these distracting thoughts and feelings.
Right, exactly. Beautifully said. Well, on that note, Elizabeth, I think we're going to say goodbye.
Okay.
Yeah. So, listeners, keep this in mind. Don't believe everything you think.
Yeah, trust Reiki. Let Reiki teach you.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Phyllis.
And thank you, listeners. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.